Welcome to the Infernal Schoolhouse Podcast.
Explosions and fire.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron. And today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about how to bring your humor into your tabletop roleplay experience while joined by our special guest, Sam, from our Monster of the Week troop. Welcome, Sam.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
And just one note, there may be some off-color humor featured in this episode. We're not really sure yet because we haven't recorded it, but just wanted to give that little disclaimer up at the top here.
All right. So, Sam, please introduce yourself and how you came to be with us here today.
Yeah, I am Sam. I'm not 100% sure that was kind of just synchronicity. I know Aaron's wife and asked to join a game, and it all kind of spiraled from there. And then they invited me onto the podcast. So
Aaron has a wife. This is how we find out.
Sorry, I just dropped big info there.
Feel so doxxed right now.
SWAT team is pulling up at Aaron's house right now.
I didn't like say where he lived yet.
We'll wait till the end of this episode.
All right, so humor in RPGs. So let's start with some instances from our gaming experiences where humor enhanced the session. And the three of us are lucky because we actually just played D&D last night. So there may be some freshies memory-wise in there somewhere.
Yeah, so I would say what we've learned from my kind of fast and furious introduction to this specific group of friends is that Ryan and I together create some very serious chaos energy together in any game we play.
I'm in complete agreement with this.
As the dungeon master / monster keeper in both of these events, you fully know this. Yeah, so Sam, tell us about the last night's adventure. That was fun.
All right, so last night we were at the end of this one shot and there are monsters that are being held back with salt, which I feel like implies some level of significant monsteriness if they're being held back by a salt barrier. And Ryan and I felt like it was not going fast enough. And we had this plan that we felt was extremely solid and everyone else was just questioning us, but we were like a united front. And then Ryan's like, let's just Leroy Jenkins this. And so like we had separate ideas of what that meant exactly. And so mine was to break the salt line and let them go because I had a second one set up that they didn't know about. And Brian's version was to just run across the other salt line with the stuff and just like basically try to beat them to this like portal altar. And so then we got into like a mini argument about like what Leroy Jenkinsing was. And I was like, I will pull up the video. We can do this right now. But it was.
You keep on using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
But it was great because like our half of the table was like so ready for it. And the other half of the table was like, you guys are idiots. Like
they were literally rolling their eyes at us. And actually, Dungeon Master, what were you thinking at that moment?
Yes.
Well, I was thinking that this is exactly what I would expect players to do in that you don't expect what they're going to do. I would have imagined that you had, you know, set up a kill box between you and the other players by Leroy Jenkins in your way into that room, but also fine. So, but then also I didn't expect you to wear a literal sheet as a ghost walking into a haunted house as a paladin, but here we are. So.
Yeah, we'll save that for another episode. That was my first paladin attempt, and I'm going to say mixed results at best.
There was strong feedback from the DM on your performance.
He's like, so you're a paladin. And I was like, oh man, this is a roguish paladin here today.
Sure is. This is like the one person that you can't come in with like the amateur paladin, you know, like with that little critiquing. So,
Okay. So after this conversation, and if there's more examples, I would love to hear them, but I'm interested to find out, you know, from all of us here, where do we think the balance is? Because honestly, one scenario of the story that Sam and I just told would be that the other players and the DM were just supremely annoyed by us and that it wasn't funny. And so how do you, you know, and I know that like the module itself, Aaron, that you were running was quite serious and it had a lot of like super creepy vibes to it. We're like listening to the Halloween soundtrack in the background while we were playing. So like, how do we think about balance here?
I think the best way to think about balance is that there's always going to be humor in games and there's always going to be drama in games, regardless of whether it's inherently supposed to be a funny game or inherently supposed to be a dramatic game. I think where you find the right balance is with your players and with the DM, I guess, also, but understanding reactions, understanding what you think is working. It's you know, like I talked about it before, as though a lot of doing anything with TTRPGs is very much an open mic night. So you're kind of balancing what you're doing and how well it's going based upon the sort of feedback you're getting back from it. But, you know, I think that it is the job of the DM to corral things in the right direction. If it's getting a little too overly serious or a little too overly silly, that might be, like you said, annoying other people. Well, I wasn't annoyed, but, you know, like it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things where you have to understand that there are limits at times. And then sometimes you have to just pause, maybe break. Even just an actual physical break is good. If somebody says, hey, let's go have a bio break, I think those all help.
I think one thing that we tried to do, I don't know that we were like super graceful with that yesterday night, but like we were so.
There was nothing graceful about last night.
Okay, no, I will say at one point we did try to get feedback on alternative plans before fully executing the Jenkinsing. But like we both, I think that the problem was we were both just so committed to it. We were like, well, that plan's not going to work. And we did let them chat with like the demon and things, but we didn't feel like it went very well. So we kind of just went for it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's reading the other people. But then the other problem is depending on like their facial expressions, we have to be careful not to push too hard, because like the facial expressions on the other side of the table were also hilarious, but like hilarious because they were so frustrated. And so like that's a hard thing too, because it's like, okay, well, this is really funny to us, but like we also don't want to push these other people away. And so I think I had at one point talked about like another time we were talking about just like trying to read people. And I'm going to be real. I think last night I may have pushed a little too far in that one.
Yeah, I do like this idea, though, Aaron, of the game master being the arbiter, because I think that person can do an aside that maybe a player can't do as easily or as gracefully, which is to pause the action and just say, hey, let's just take the temperature here. How's everyone feeling? Do we want to take a moment? So I do think that that's like a little bit of an extra lift on the game master to do that. But that does feel like the right way to go.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, I mean, you deal with that in everything. It's like if you think about like, you know, television or movie productions as well, you know, they oftentimes get caught up in giggles and it can ruin, you know, some shots and take some time when people are trying to get work done. And sometimes you just have to take a moment and step away from it and come back.
And I think the benefit of humor in more like horror based or like anything that's being described in like a really intense way, like I think that humor side of it can allow for like a kind of release of that,
very like, much so.
Yeah, feeling of darkness sort of piece of it. So I would say I'd actually probably be more worried if there was zero humor in a horror game the entire time.
That sounds awful.
I would agree.
I feel like even in horror movies, there's those punctuated moments of humor, right? Because you can't, your emotions can't sustain that level of tension for that many right. hours. Okay, so Sam, we're talking a lot about influence and arbitration, but from a player perspective, and Aaron, I'd love to hear from you as well on this, but the creating humorous elements that fit seamlessly into the narrative, I think is a really amazing thing if it can be done. And I'd love to hear you both talk about that as well.
I mean, from a player side, I feel like it's just like taking advantage of moments of like punniness, like puns I feel like work really well because they're contextually based. And like, especially like where you are, like if you're playing Pirate Borg and you're on the seas, like salty sailor jokes are going to be really funny. Whereas like if you're in a haunted house, probably not going to hit the same way. I think that context based as a player, like just try to be aware of like who you're talking to and what the situation is really helpful.
And Aaron, in your answer, I'm hoping that we get to hear about Fabio a little bit too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it comes down to the backstory. Like, and I will talk about Fabio in a second, but I just want to piggyback on what Sam was saying, that she was playing essentially a baker last night, which I thought was amusing. But this is one of those things where you could really lean on it, you know, and then you could even come up with a weird, silly thing, like things you would say, like, I don't know, I'm about to preheat your doom or something. But either way, like you have these opportunities to do that. But I think a core part of it is find something in your head that you think is amusing, because I think that ultimately you're going to want to play more if you have fun with your own character. And because I'm a forever DM, I always do crazy stuff, usually, like Fabio the Quaffed, as you mentioned. And Fabio was just stuck in my head as this, I believe he's a cleric that we had him set up as, but a very well-maned gentleman who has, locks that are very luxurious. And he would just take time out in the middle of combat or something important to brush his hair or put it in a man bun.
Yeah, put it up.
Yeah.
If shit then, was getting know, real, he puts his band on up.
And, you know, just taking like little actions like, okay, what would this really ludicrous person do? Oh, I know. I'm going to strap a goblin to my chest and wear like a baby Bjorn before I go into combat. So just little stuff like that, I think, is fun and punctuates it. Just like my celestial warlock who, you know, worships a unicorn because he's bored. And I think that sort of stuff makes it more fun because the more invested you are in your own enjoyment, the more enjoyable it'll be for everyone else.
Yes, I love this. And I think, too, the way you've described this is really intuitive, which is, does it make you chuckle? And if it doesn't actually make you chuckle, keep going.
Yeah.
Right.
Google something else, watch another movie. But if you're not amused, likely other people won't be either.
Well, and that's true. That character background, too, is like so big because like people's background is what influences their sense of humor anyways. And so something that like naturally came up last night in our game was my character is a baker and she was burning any clothes they came across or like for the first part of it because she did not want them to reanimate. And so then they were joking that I was like a pyromaniac. And I was like, yeah, that sounds perfect. Like she was a pyromaniac as a child in my head. And I was like, and now she just bakes and has all these evocation fire spells because like that's how she channels this. And like, and that just kind of made this background that made it funnier because she was just constantly like figuring out what could be burned or not burned. Like it was just kind of a funny, specific piece. And I think that specificity with background allows for like more natural comedy because like people are funny. We're funny just as humans.
Yeah. And the plausibility piece too, because you had all that salt too, which definitely made sense with your baking background. So I know both of you, I know we have a forever DM and a kind of Sam, you call yourself a baby DM, but I'm wondering about designing quests and campaign elements. So we've talked about the organic nature of character backstories and things like that, but let's talk about more like world building components. And how do you kind of inject the humor in there or set up some ways where humor can develop in your campaign? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would say that you should always kind of set the expectation by session zero about what the game might be. So for example, if you're going to be running a game, you can't do like super serious the entire time and all of a sudden be like, oh, well, now we're just zany out of nowhere. Like there needs to be an understanding of who you are as a DM or GM. And then what you're going to be putting out there. So know that there's going to be some sessions that might be a little sillier or that there might be some items that are a little sillier. But I think that's just one way of just testing the waters of just put something in your game that feels a little fun, like an item, for example, a magic item, and then see where it goes from there. Because I think that you can find that those can be pretty funny and can kind of mix things up. I did a one shot once where, I don't remember if you played in that one, Brian, or not, but it was during my West March's campaign, and everybody was assaulting this bakery, and they bought a gift while they were there. And one of the results of this was they found this ring called the Ring of Hugs from Grandma, and it acted
heard
as
of this
a,
ring.
It always gave you like a very warming feeling, and it also gave you protection from cold. So I thought it was very funny because the West March's campaign was set in the cold, but it's just funny because it looked like one of those old school rings like from the 80s that said grandma and were like little bejeweled on there. So very amusing idea, but just those sort of things that make it fun. Or you give someone like a cursed backpack that they don't know is cursed, but seems like it's really cool because it acts like a bag of holding, but it turns out it's like the backpack from Dora the Explorer. And then it gets like really loud when it's in the dungeon. Like, what are we doing here?
You know what? I think that we should create a special item that's a thought bracelet at this point. That we should come up with some sort of.
Oh, you mean that it just projects your thoughts out?
No, like the thought bracelet you got yesterday.
Oh, that type of thought.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I think from my side, I think item-wise, like there's always like the silly items that are silly in and of themselves. But I also think that introducing items that feel out of place can cause humor to come about naturally too. Like something that looks unnaturally like colored or large or something like that, just something that feels out of place that they'll focus on. Like it's not specifically, I think, designed. So like I have said this before, a baby DM. I've only ever done pre-done campaigns like baby little ones, like Ice Fire Peak from WotC. But those actually have baked in elements of humor that I really appreciate. So Harbinger, I think that's his name. Weston, I don't know, but he's like the quest person that the players go to turn in their quest board kind of pieces. His character is literally designed to never come out of his house. So he's terrified of the dragon and he will just yell outside the door and be like, prove who you are and then I will pay you. And I think it's hilarious because like every time they come, I make them like reprove it. And so I'll have them like try to convince him of what they've done or like, how are you going to show him if his door doesn't have a window or like, how are you like, it's just kind of funny. And then also there's like a gnome kind of village that has these giant mushrooms there that they use for like food and wine. And then there's a fuel mushroom. They're different colors. And like those colors are out of place. And so like when my players got there, they were like, we should harvest these 4-foot tall mushrooms. And they're trying to figure out how to get them to fall over. And at one point, my wizard, not mine, but my player wizard shot a firebolt at it. And I had effectively, because of the size of it, they lit the entire island of mushrooms on fire because it had a chain reaction. But there's just like these random things that are put in there to interact with that like could derive humor.
Yeah. I like that too, this idea that something that could be so seemingly simple is actually really hard. Like, you know, the quest giver, it should be like, okay, let's go back and just tell him that we did it. And it's like, no, he doesn't believe you. No, he's locked in his house.
He refuses to exit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do like this idea too of utilizing NPCs with humorous quirks to just add a little bit of flavor. And there is something I think that's safe about this as well, because if it's a magic item or an NPC and the players aren't reacting to it, easy, just let that one go.
Right.
And if they really, it's that classic example, you know, it's like they go into the tavern and there's that dark, mysterious stranger that clearly has the key and they just want to talk to the goblin at the bar. It's like, okay, well, the goblin just became a really important NPC in this game. And while they're talking to him, I'm madly looking up names for goblins.
Sure.
I like the level of flexibility that kind of hints at, though, in a game, and like kind of not fully bending to the player's wishes, but like being really flexible and willing to adapt rather than getting too attached to the base game design, because I think that gets away from like the imagination and theater of the mind component. If like I think the goal would be to avoid railroading unless necessary. And so that kind of adaptation piece of it, I think, is a really strong way to play into humor in a cohesive way.
Yeah. And if we're talking about improv, I mean, that's the name of the game, right? If you go to an improv show and one person is just sticking to one idea, then it's probably not going to play very well at all. And so that as game masters, we shouldn't be that person.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. And that goes into like a note of like, if you tell a joke and like no one laughs at it, like don't say it 3 more times. Just like read the room.
Mm-hmm.
Or just say, whatever, just keep going.
So is this humor genre specific? So is there like fantasy humor versus sci-fi versus horror? Or is this just something that organically is going to kind of feel the same as we're running these games?
I think it's both, honestly, because I think that there is a lot of it that's pretty game agnostic. You know, it's just natural humor based upon certainly your culture or upbringing. But then beyond that, I think a lot of those RPG genres have a lot of different tropes attached to them. And those tropes are what make it more amusing or make it more understandable. Like, you know, a horror game, for example, is going to have more horror jokes around it. Like it's going to be something that might be humorous around, you know, body horror or weirdness that's going on in there. It's not going to have necessarily the same sort of jokes you'd have in more high fantasy stuff. You know, you're going to expect silly stuff in high fantasy. Horror stuff might be a little bit less silly, but also still kind of fun.
Okay, so an example from last night was we had a table full of skeletons that were expecting to eat flesh, was their request. And we had just killed a horde of rats effectively that was attacking Brian's character. And so we like went back in and like plated up this like rat viscera to serve these things that thought that we were their butler. And so we kind of went back in and like presented it as Radicus Tartar, like a very silly sort of thing. And like that would in a fantasy game be like very weird. Like I feel like that character would be like pariah-y or like people would have questions. But like in this setting, it worked really well.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the challenges. So as a little bit more on the baby DM side, I'm going to say that if I sit down and I'm going to start to create my campaign, do my session planning, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to put some humor in there, I feel a little bit intimidated. So what are some of these sort of challenges that we see, and what advice do we have to try to like get me out of my head about it and get some of these things in there?
Well, I would start off by saying that you should be in your head a little bit about it anyway. I mean, I think you
oh god, don't send me back in my head.
Deeper.
That's right.
But I think your biggest challenges are going to be essentially keeping it flowing, because the other part about being a DM, besides making it fun, is keeping time. And so, yeah, you can put some humorous things there, but that could easily derail a session to the point where you don't even finish what you're supposed to finish that. So, you know, I would start light, find the things that are small that you can inject in there instead of going at it with big stuff. Or if you are going to do big things, just have one big silly session. Like, just do a thing like, we're going to do a fun game, and I have a bunch of weird stuff I want to throw in here and see what works and what doesn't, but this is not going to be a serious session, right? Yeah. So you have those opportunities of pivoting how you want to do.
Yeah, I just had this memory of, I think it was Toby ran a one-shot one time where he had sort of told us all that it was going to be goofy, and there was a Goliath rogue who really thought he was very sneaky, and he was just massive and could never hide behind anything. And nice. It kept rolling really well on stealth, but it was just a fun game because it was like so ridiculous.
Very, very Drax-like for sure.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is a more back to like player version. So my like really long-term character is an illusionist wizard, but my DM after like 3.5 years, I managed to get a hold of a Staff of the Magi. And there was we had a barbarian in the group who like already pretended he was magic. Like anytime he did something, he considered it a spell, even though it wasn't. But then I started using the staff to support his thought that he was magic. So I would enlarge him when he like got very upset, or when he was a little bit scared, I would shrink him, and like all these things just using my staff. So I didn't have to use like any of my spell slots, but it was just kind of this funny thing that came naturally. But going back into like baking it in, I feel like, especially as like a really new game master, that like it's not something that I'm really focusing on when I start. I would say I probably inject it more through characters than I do like the NPC characters than I do like specific items or anything like that. And then I just kind of play those specific NPCs in a weird way. Cause like even the guy who hides behind his door, I could play that in a really boring way, but I make him just like ridiculous about how they have to show. And that's just like a modification of that character from me. That's not a super high lift. So I'm still more focusing on that storyline. And that kind of goes to like a golden mean, like an Aristotelian sort of kind of vibe where you're trying to balance the enjoyment with that pacing that Aaron was talking about.
Welcome to the show, Aristotle. So let's talk about gauging players' reactions. Mm-hmm. So player comfort, and we've touched on this a little bit, but I want to know a little bit more from like a tool perspective or a methodology perspective. Let's say the table's riffing and we're all thinking something's funny. And then as a GM, you're noticing somebody's not into it. Someone's not laughing. They're starting to look a little bit, you know, like they're pulling away. What mm-hmm. are some tools or some ways that we can think about addressing this?
I think the biggest thing is, just like I said before, is stopping whatever you're doing, right? Your biggest job when you are running a game is to read the room. And it's not just about humor, it's about everything you're doing. So if somebody in the room is uncomfortable, then stop making them uncomfortable. I mean, that's just how it's going to be. So if that means that you have to redirect, take a break, or do something else, that's how it's going to go, because everybody has their own hangups and their own things that they don't really enjoy. Or maybe they're at a point like last night. I don't think people, if there was any annoyance, were annoyed about the humor that was occurring, because it was pretty funny. It's just that it was right at the very end of the game. And it was one of those things where it was kind of one of those make or break moments that could have gone awry, you know? So
we could have unleashed evil into the world for eternity.
You did think that's great.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's mostly understanding that not everybody's going to laugh at everything. It's just treat it like you're at work a little bit, especially with people you are still getting used to. Mm. You know, try not to make jokes that make fun of anybody's ethnicity or background. Try not to sexually harass people. You know, like the hardest thing, I think, for especially paid DMs, they don't have that level of familiarity or comfort around people. So they have to go in really as neutral as you can when it comes to humor and when it comes to, ooh, maybe I've, you know, overstepped on my bounds here and then I should bring it back in. Or maybe one of the players did. And then have that conversation as a sidebar with somebody so you're not calling them out in front of everyone.
Yeah, but I think like honesty and candidness there and like addressing it, I think is helpful instead of sweeping it under the rug. Just because like if your goal is to have like a long-term game, you don't want like that one thing to be sitting in the back of their head. So I do think that sidebar conversation is really important, whether you're paid or if it's your friends. I would also say that player reception, I think, again, like watching how your players are reacting, listening, sometimes what people make jokes about or when they make jokes will tell you actually how they're feeling and like their comfort level with the game. So I think that's kind of interesting too, just from like a more psychological perspective.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about some sort of technical mechanics here. So we've talked a lot in the past about the importance of a session zero. So I think having people sort of put on the table, either privately or as a group, what are some of the things that I really don't want to talk about or I don't think are funny or just places I don't want to go? And then there's also this X card mechanic that I know a lot of tables have introduced. And when I was playing games at Gen Con last year, at a couple of the tables, they have this X card mechanic where it's basically, there's a card with an X on it. At any point for any reason, you can actually just sort of play that card. And then that's like even a nonverbal way to just exercise a little bit of like discomfort and let people know, like maybe we should pause or back up or just go in a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah, agreed.
I also kind of think that sometimes like diffusion of humor, I think is also kind of a skill in and of itself. We kind of talked about this, but that like diffusion back in to where you're going with it. Like in my game that I'm playing with my family right now, it's my mom, my dad, my sister, and my brother-in-law. There was a point where they were trying to enter a mine and they were all really having terrible roles about like information about what was there. They knew, they were able to figure out it was a were-rat just because of the NPC that was there and told them, but they could not figure out anything else. They did not know how big they were. They did not have any ideas. And my sister decided she had a plan. So she is a rogue, but they were at like level 3. So they had the magic sort of side. And so she threw out a minor illusion of a dead, dying baby, which shocked everyone at the table. And so the initial reaction was not humor. It was just straight up blank, like shock, stares, open mouth. But then afterwards, it was like, oh, like I just pulled that away from her too, like because she clearly went pretty intense with it. And I was like, really? That's the thing you came up with? Not even like a pig or something? And then everybody started laughing. So like, I think that kind of like social dynamic of it as well is kind of helpful for people if they do happen to like maybe step too far. You can kind of police that and just move the energy a little bit.
That's right. Gosh.
Not even a piece of beef jerky or something?
Right? Yeah, we went full dead baby right away. Her husband looked at her like, who are you?
Just like scoots the chair like a couple like, inches away.
That's right. Don't ever go full dead baby on this.
Yeah. Okay, so this has become one of my favorite questions and one of my favorite places to go. But when we talk about inspiration for humor, I would love to hear from you all. Books, movies, other media, places to get a sense or steep in the humor that you might be able to draw and bring into your games.
Sure. I would say one of the best ones just from a sense of zaniness would be Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I think there's so much stuff there that you could even just put in a game, like the Holy Hand Grenade and everything else. Just great stuff. But yeah. I think one
and
of my
genre specific too, which is
Very genre specific. But I think one of my other favorites is just pretty much not too much all of the absurdity of the movies, but I really like the humor of anything that Leslie Nielsen is in, and not so much everything in the movie, but just having a straight man there, I think really sells those movies of the whole world is falling around, you know, like it's chaotic. But then here he is just the most straight man sort of like thing in there. Like he never plays zany. He's just the guy who's there. It's really amusing by how he acts or doesn't act when things are going on. And I think that's a lot of fun.
That dichotomy. Yeah.
Right.
I'd say mine is going to be like very classic. And it would be The Princess Bride. I feel like that ties in a lot of things that we've talked about in terms of like using player background to create motivations that are kind of funny. It's got things in it that I feel are really well done.
What about you, Brian? What do you think about that?
Hold on. I'm going to defer here for a moment because I'm drawing a blank on movies. But Aaron, is there any music or anything that could be
music
a component of this? Because I know you're a big advocate of putting on music and then just like letting it wash over you.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of like appropriate music that's
oh, I want to hear some inappropriate music.
I'm sure you do. I'll tell you after this podcast.
Okay.
I think one that's really funny, not just from their music, which I'm sure some people would find grating, but also their music videos. I think Little Big, the Russian group, is really funny. Like, especially like they have this one video that's all about Kim Jong-un trying to romance a bomb. And it's the most insane video. But just that sort of idea of like, I don't even know where they came up with that idea, but it's just so priceless. Like, he's taking it on dates and he gets like bomb tattooed on his knuckles. I mean, it's just like, it's so good. But that's the sort of thing where you can listen to where there's a lot of zaniness to their music. And if you're listening to that, you're going to put yourself in a better headspace to have fun.
Yeah. Like to just get in the mood a little bit. One idea that I had, I recently saw Amelie in a movie theater. Mm. And I found myself just cackling for too long at some of the jokes. But one of the ones that really got me was Amelie really wants her father to get out of the house and he won't. So she kidnaps his garden gnome and sends it with a flight attendant all around the world. And so there's a little bit of timing here where it's like, you know, you're doing other things, you're seeing other components, and then you just cut back to the father and he's waiting at the mailbox because he knows another postcard from like Moscow or something is coming. And it, you know, so there's just this moment of like the joke is spread out a little bit. So you just almost forgot about it. And then you come back to it and you're like, oh man, here we go again. He's going to get another postcard. So I think instead of these like punctuated, you know, like scenes, I think those little moments can be scattered throughout with like with some nice comic effect. Yeah.
A recurring device of humor.
Cool. Yes. I think that's a great movie too. I think also like, there's other humor there that I don't want to necessarily mention on the podcast, but it's also one of my other favorite funny scenes, I think, in the movie, but I'm not going to talk.
Yeah.
Now, question here, something that's coming up in my mind. Are these moments that are just sort of like punctuation points? Are they asides from the plot? Or can humor be like really integral to the plot that's going to reveal character traits, build the world, et cetera?
I think it's absolutely can be integral to the plot. I think a lot of it depends on what players give to it. You know, like one of those moments that I know that you and I have talked about before is during our last one shot weekend where my players just had that one farmer that they just could not let go of that was just supposed to be an exposition dump. And then they started turning him into this sort of, in their minds, this sort of mastermind rogue, you know, time traveler kind of. So he just kind of kept showing up at random times and it was just blowing their mind. But he had nothing to do with the plot. But because they made him have something to do with the plot, I made him have something to do with the plot. And then it just got funnier and funnier until he fell into a kraken's mouth from like 100 feet up in the sky. So it was a good time.
A good example, too, of leaning into the improv component, right?
Oh, yeah.
If your players are telling you this NPC is important, then as a GM, you're like, yes, and he's going to get hit by a kraken.
Very much a yes and moment.
My OG DM, my like wizard character, the crazy wizard, I think started off as in like her late teens, and people kept joking that the way she was acting was like preteen chaos level. And so over time, she actually started reverse aging me until my character was like 13. And so like then it was even crazier because they would take her into these like there's like a fight ring that was underground, and there's like this 13-year-old with them with like the staff of a magi, like way too powerful for how old she was, but like that reverse aging part was like part of that narrative that was built through the character interaction.
And now you're playing a 12-year-old in the Monster of the Week campaign.
Yeah, for the record, it's mostly just to channel. My job is to teach small children, and so I channel their chaotic energy into those characters.
You have so many real-world examples that you just can't help yourself.
I do.
That's right.
This has been a great conversation, and I just want to make sure we don't miss anything. So is there any final advice that you have for GMs or players that are eager to incorporate more humor into their role-playing experiences?
I would say just give it a shot. I mean, again, these games are open mic nights, whether it's the dramatic part or the comedy part, and you are going to flub, you're going to fail. That's just how it's going to be. The question is what you do with that information and then how you use that to improvise new games and actions and fun stuff. And look at other things. Find things that you find funny, because if you find it funny and then you can somehow tie that into your game, you know, watch the movies you watch or read books that, you know, you think are amusing. Find some of those things and just take some inspiration and see what your players do with it.
For sure. And I actually think that we can wrap this whole thing up with a pretty bow. I think it all can come back to Leroy Jenkins. Okay. You just have to not nice get in back. Your head. Your time's up. Just do it. Just do it. Go with it. See how it goes and just adapt to it.
I love that. And my final thought here is, as the game master specifically, you're sort of setting the tone, not sort of, you are setting the tone for the game. And so I think if you're holding back, then I think that might be mirrored with your players. And so I love what you just said, Aaron, too, is like, just allow yourself to fail. Introduce something silly into the game. See how it goes. If it fails, just put it in the rearview mirror and just keep on going.
Absolutely.
I love it. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today. We love having you in the Monster of the Week campaign. And it's so much fun to have you on the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, dear friends, for spending time with us this week. Please check out our Instagram or us at our website, infernalschoolhouse.com. Oh, and we sell stuff on Etsy, too. And Sam, do you want to read this next bit?
Yeah, for sure. So we started our Monster of the Week live game back on March 4th. Twitch only holds videos for like 7 days, so we're working on a YouTube channel that we can host all of those on historically. Today we're recording on a Monday, so we're actually going to be doing it tonight. So if you want to check it out, we'll have our video up for 7 days over there till the 25th at twitch.tv/infernalschoolhouse for the second episode. And then we'll get that one up onto the YouTube channel so you can see everything if you'd like. But it's very fun. Ryan and I tend to bring the chaotic energy over there as well. So come check us out.
And Aaron, as the Monster Keeper, tries to rein us in, or at least gives us consequences for our insane behavior.
That's right. There are always consequences.
The Monster Keeper is definitely fully capable of humor as well. I have been slow clapped by a demon right after Ryan as Jim punched a demon in the chest. So it's great fun. Join us over there.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, guys.